You're listening to the Common Descent Podcast.
Hello, Will.
Hello, David.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Silver Screen Science, a series here on the Common Descent Podcast where we talk about the science in movies. Specifically, we like to explore how science and scientists are represented and portrayed on the big screen, sometimes the small screen, but in this case, the big screen, not just picking at what movies get right or wrong, but where these films fit into the intersection of science and pop culture. This month, April 2024, we're doing a little batch of Silver Screen Science episodes on the theme of sharks.
Yep.
Shark movies. We started last episode with Meg 2, a very recent shark movie that follows up from a movie we've already talked about before, also in our wheelhouse of ancient creatures and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
This episode, we're moving back a couple decades in time for another shark movie, Deep Blue Sea.
Yeah.
This movie is so much fun. We're going to talk about Deep Blue Sea and the science of Deep Blue Sea. This episode, Silver Screen Science, we're talking about the science. If you're interested in hearing our personal thoughts, after every Silver Screen Science episode, we put another episode called More Thoughts up on the Patreon just for our patrons. But here's a little sneak preview of that conversation. This movie's tons of fun.
Nah, I like this movie.
We like that. This is a fun movie. So as before, we'll talk about the science, the scientists, the creatures, which is kind of the highlight this time around. Because we're all in this about sharks. So let's get into it. Let's dive in.
Nah.
hey, from this point on, spoiler warning. We are going to be discussing this movie in its entirety. We're going to talk about what happens and who dies and all that stuff.
Yep, yep.
So if you haven't seen Deep Blue Sea, which you totally should, Deep Blue Sea is a lot of fun, and you don't want to be spoiled, stop here, go watch it, and then come back.
Yes.
Deep Blue Sea is a movie released in 1999, directed by Rennie Harlan, and whereas Meg 2, which we talked about last time, is more in that sort of action-adventure genre, Deep Blue Sea is more of a thriller-slash-horror-themed movie.
Yeah, it's a more classic monster movie in the you're being hunted.
Yes, I see it listed as horror.
Yeah.
A lot of times online. Hey, Will, what's Deep Blue Sea about?
Happily, Deep Blue Sea is about a research station out in the middle of the ocean that is studying sharks for Alzheimer's treatments, taking proteins from their brain that hopefully can treat Alzheimer's symptoms, because sharks are resistant to those kinds of neurodegenerative diseases that we experience. They get into trouble when one of their sharks gets out and attacks a boat, and so they are under scrutiny now by the company and have to prove that they should exist. And whilst they are under review, while they're being visited by Samuel L. Jackson, the sharks run amok and cause chaos as they break into the facility, because it turns out that they've modified these sharks and they are now super intelligent and are looking to get at the people inside the base and eventually get out to freedom. So we follow the people through the base as they try to escape and survive the sharks, as the sharks continue to break down doors and chase after them.
Yes. Most of the people do not succeed in that effort to survive the attack.
No, they do not.
As it turns out. As usual, we'll start with the creatures, and we'll start with the headlining creatures of the movie and our theme, sharks.
Yeah.
There's four sharks in the movie.
Yes.
Sort of four individual sharks. There are the three sharks that are kept in the research facility, which are stated to be Mako sharks.
Mm-hmm.
And then there is a guest appearance by a normal shark.
Yes.
Which is supposed to be a tiger shark, which they catch, and then it gets fed to the other sharks.
Yeah, because there's a line that's thrown out. They don't go into much detail, but that at this point, the experimental sharks, which they call Gen 1s and a single Gen 2, their behavior has shifted so dramatically that they now will only hunt other sharks.
Yes. So, looking at these sharks and sort of their behavior and their shark tropiness, This is a monster movie, and the monsters are sharks.
Yes.
So, as one might expect, they absolutely fall into a lot of our typical monsterification traits. This movie is an interesting one to talk about because often in movies, sharks just act like that.
Yes.
They're like, yeah, there is a shark, and because it is a shark, it is trying to kill and eat everything because that's what sharks do. This movie actually gives a little in-movie explanation for why the sharks are acting this way. They have been medically altered.
Yep.
It's supposed to be one thing, and then it turns out to be genetic alterations.
Yeah, yeah, that it was just like hormones or something before, like growth alteration. But then we find out that, nope, they gene spliced or at least did something to the genetics.
Yes, and we'll talk about that a little bit later because that's a fun topic to discuss. So these are super smart sharks.
Yes.
The idea is that they have expanded. I think they say they expanded the frontal lobe like four times or something like that.
Yeah, they needed the brain to produce more of the protein and it wasn't producing enough. So they messed with them to have bigger brains, which resulted in proportionally bigger bodies. So they are also, they're smarter and bigger than they should be.
So they are both doing sharky monster stuff and also super smart monster stuff.
Yes. The normal shark, the tiger shark, which isn't actually the tiger shark. The model they use is just one of the, it's a repainted Mako that they, because they have practical puppetry. Yeah. So there's a bunch of really.
Because this is the 90s.
Yes. and the puppets look great. I love the puppets in this film.
They're good looking sharks.
They look like sharks. But the tiger shark is just a painted Mako shark.
It doesn't, with stripes.
Yeah. It doesn't look like either a tiger shark nor sand tiger shark. So it doesn't fit either of the ones that use that name. But all in all, that one's not too bad. They show it be a little aggressive.
Sure.
But they even have a moment where the shark handler's like, no, they don't like the taste of us.
Yeah.
You know, they just, it's a mistake whenever they bite us. That wasn't it hunting me. That was just it coming over to investigate me.
Mm-hmm.
So they handle that one pretty normally.
Yeah, there's a lot of sort of baseline shark stuff. So there's monstery stuff that the sharks do, right? The sharks are shown to be super strong. They're like knocking down doors.
Oh yeah, yeah. Like
banging steel doors open.
Yes, and there's a part where he says like, given enough run-up room, they could get like 2 tons of force behind a strike. And it's like, that's not how shark skulls work.
No.
Unless you've also made their skull incredibly dense and not made out of cartilage anymore.
So they're super strong. They're super durable in that sense, although they aren't doing the movie monster thing that monsters often do, and that they get shot 20 times.
Yes.
And these sharks are shown to be killed by fairly reasonable things.
Yep.
They're also noisy.
Mm-hmm.
There's a bunch of moments in this movie where the sharks are like roaring under the water, which is a very classic monstery thing for animals to do.
Yep.
Early on when the shark, and I think it's the tiger shark, I don't think it's one of the monster sharks, where it's like rushing towards the guy and there is just this like noise as it's coming forward, which was very silly.
Yep.
So the sharks are absolutely doing some of the classic movie monster things. But that dude, so Carter, I think the character's name is like championing sharks throughout a good portion of the movie.
Yeah.
Explaining shark behavior.
Mm-hmm.
It's like they don't actually want to go after people. And he talks about these are things that will attract the attention of sharks. There is some real world shark behavior stuff sprinkled in here.
Yep, yep. He maneuvers around the sharks. Like I've seen people who swim with sharks maneuver around them, of just like push their nose out of the way and get to the side of them, you know, sort of stuff. He feels like a fairly realistic shark diver.
Yeah. So the movie has a little bit of both, where on the one hand, you have a character who is talking about the sharks the way that you might just talk about sharks.
Yes.
And even the basis of the medical research, where they're like, yeah, sharks don't get cancer and they don't get these degenerative diseases. And that's true to some extent in the real world.
Yeah, sharks are remarkably resistant to a lot of those very common ailments that a lot of other life deals with.
Yep. And then on the other hand, you have the characters talking about sharks as though they are killing machines.
Yes.
Not just the super smart murder sharks, but you have characters who are like, oh, so you made sharks super intelligent.
Yeah.
what a horrible idea, you made nature's best killing machine intelligent, and now obviously that's going to lead to chaos.
Yeah, you gave it will and desire.
Yes, yeah, they say that. Yep. You gave it will and desire.
Yep. And yeah, it's most of the time that the discussion is monstery, it's about the altered sharks, which is very much giving that feeling of sharks are sharks. You made monsters.
Yes.
You made devilfish. You know, a bunch of them.
And someone calls it a demon.
Yep. Yeah. They literally call it the devil.
LL Cool J says it's the devil.
So like, and that I like that is a kind of at least nice change of pace from a lot of creature feature monster movies, in that it's not that the creatures are inherent, but you stepped in and made it right. Unnatural, quote unquote, and messed with it, and now it's a problem. But then there are times where they just allude to, there's the point where one of them says, like, sharks go back to a time where everything on Earth was just flesh and teeth.
Yes.
And this is just that, yeah, they've been these perfect killing machines for all time. So it definitely kind of swings back and forth a little bit.
Yeah.
Here and there.
They're trying to do a little bit of both.
Yeah.
The monster sharks themselves lean into that monstery aspect of being not only like smart, they absolutely have that they can open doors.
Yes.
Feeling to them. The movie goes to the extent that these sharks have a plan.
Yes.
The plan is to destroy the research station enough that they can escape and go out into the sea.
Mm-hmm.
Which, sure, movie monster, you made them super smart.
Yeah.
I do think it's interesting the way the movie interprets intelligence in a wild species. Because it's not only leaning into monster tropes, it's leaning into smart animal tropes.
Mm-hmm.
It's shown and discussed in the movie that once they got smart, they started pack hunting.
Yep.
Basically. They start working together to hunt stuff. Which is a really interesting, because we think about that as being a smart animal thing.
Yeah, teamwork is
It's teamwork. You're cooperating, even though many of the smartest animals in the world don't actually do that kind of thing.
Yep. It's kind of an interesting double-edged coin in that they gave a reason for why they're smarter.
Mm-hmm.
So they aren't just your typical movie monster creature that is unreasonably malicious or planning. But this one, it's like, no. There is a reason they're smarter, and you could even, at least for me, it always made sense of why they wouldn't like the people, because they're being, like,
right.
Now they are smart enough to be like, stop stabbing me with needles, stop, yes. Like...
We're being experimented on and altered.
And, like, we can now perceive the fence in a different light.
Mm-hmm.
I can understand why you could give them malicious intent toward the people.
Yeah.
But then they are doing some things that... Well, they also do some of those things, and... The one I always think of is Planet of the Apes, where you've increased their intelligence and now they can do a thing that physically they can't do.
Yes.
Like Planet of the Apes, they gain the ability to speak English.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not why apes can't make our words. Their mouth isn't shaped right.
Right. They don't have the anatomy for that.
Yeah. We have a very particular mouth and vocal cords to make the speech we make. Other primates can't do all the sounds we can make.
Mm-hmm.
They have the sharks swim backwards, that they've learned how to swim backwards.
Yes.
And like, maybe. That's one of those.
They
like,
came up with a trick, and they one simple trick for swimming backwards.
Yeah, maybe.
They hold their breath, and then they swim backwards. And
if a shark could problem solve, they could come up with a, kind of like how we do things that are very weird movements, like ballet and gymnastics. Like, that's not a normal way for a human to move, but we got creative.
Yeah, we decided to do it that way.
But that's also one of those that could potentially be like, no, that's not physically, like, kind of like horses and cows, like going up and down stairs. Like, that's not a problem solving issue. That's a way their legs bend issue.
Right.
This is a way their body moves issue, that you've suggested that they now are capable of things that might not actually be possible, no matter how smart they get.
Yeah. So that intelligence overcoming regular limitations of the body, which again is a trope of this, and this isn't the first movie to do this sort of super smart monster. This movie came out 6 years after Jurassic Park, and it shows.
Yes.
There's a lot of the, as it were, DNA of Jurassic Park in this film. The setup is fairly similar. It feels Crichton-y. The whole movie feels like a Crichton book. And the sharks act in many of the same ways that the velociraptors in Jurassic Park do.
Yes.
They're opening doors. They're making plans. They're hunting in packs. All that kind of smart animal stuff.
Yeah.
It's interesting because they are portraying these sharks as super smart, but they also give them the tropey monster stuff that is often attributed to sharks. One of the most common things that sharks get treated with in movies is that mindless, voracious predator thing, the blood in the water trope. And this movie has a point towards the end of the movie where a character outright says, "You may be super intelligent, but you're still just an animal."
Yep.
And then cuts her hand and jumps in the water to attract the attention of the shark.
And the shark stops doing the culmination of its plan.
Yeah, the what's implied the entire movie has been to get out of this gate.
And the shark is almost through said gate.
Yep.
Stops, turns around to go eat.
To go eat this person.
Yeah.
The implication being that that...
Can't this, help it.
Yeah, it can't help itself. That attraction to stimulus. Again, the blood in the water trope, which is not a thing that... a way that sharks actually act, is so ingrained, no matter how smart you get. Again, it's Bruce from Finding Nemo.
Yes.
It's like, you have achieved enlightenment as a shark, but the smell of blood turns you into a monster again.
Yep. Yeah. And so it's got a very interesting mix of when they are being just sharks, you know, just movie sharks, and super intelligent sharks. There are definitely scenes where there doesn't seem to be much intelligence going on.
Yeah, well, because they're acting like a straightforward movie monster.
Exactly. Now that I'm in the room with you, I'm just going to be trying to bite my way through this desk.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just going to be... There's not many moments of problem solving or clever, like, getting around the barriers the people put forward or something.
Yeah.
It's just eating machine now. So it does seem to kind of... waffle between.
Yeah, they want both.
How smart are these sharks, or when are they smart? Or are they only smart when they can take a deep breath and...
Right. Well, it's smart. They're smart for the slasher movie scenes.
Yep.
Where they're stalking people and breaking down the doors and shutting off the power and all the smart villain things. But then when it's one-on-one against the characters, they're movie sharks.
Yes.
Because that's what the horror of sharks in movies is.
Yes.
Is just that voracious eating machine.
Yeah.
So in terms of just sharks in movies, this is the running theme of our silver screen for this month, discussing how these sort of fit into the shark movie, typical movie portrayals. How do these sharks do as movie sharks?
I feel like this one is a little bit better than the average one in some ways because they portray that this is unnatural.
Yes. And they even compare it.
Yes.
They say, yes, that tiger shark was acting like a normal shark. I was able to get the thing out of its mouth. It didn't actually want to go after me.
Mm-hmm.
Like, here's all that shark stuff.
Like, they, you know, it's leaning into some of the tropes in that it's got a license plate in its mouth. They're gobbling things up, you know, which is based on real stuff, but is definitely overhyped.
Right.
Not every tiger shark has a license plate in its belly. We have found that before, but now at least half a dozen movies have done that.
Right.
Where a shark coughs up a license plate.
Now it's a famous thing about sharks.
You could put something else in their mouth. Think of some other funny metal thing.
Like a hubcap.
Yes. Think of something else funny.
A front bumper.
Yeah. I don't know what, but figure something else. You all are the writers that make movies. Figure out something clever. Stop doing license plates. So they do some of the cliches. They do some of the tropes. The shark is still played up to be extremely dangerous, but not malicious.
Well, and you still have the thing where the character jumps in the water with the shark and the other character, at least especially the new guy who just showed up, treats it like it's this ridiculous thing.
Yes.
He's like, what? You're going in the water with the shark? But then to the movie's credit, that guy's like, yeah, it's no big deal. It's just a shark. I know how to handle sharks.
Exactly. So it's at least nice in the fact that it is emphasizing the reason these sharks are a problem is because us humans messed with them.
Yes.
But past the beginning of the movie, that's not re-emphasized.
yeah,
regularly enough to make it feel like at that point now the only sharks we're dealing with are these monster sharks. So now every time you do a shark trope, it just feels like a shark trope.
Right. And they do a bunch of the classic shark tropes. They do the thing where the shark, well, as always, the fins are above the water.
Yep. Unless they're being sneaky.
Unless they're... Well, this movie is interesting with the fins above the water. So, for anyone who's unfamiliar, that's not what sharks do.
Yes.
At least not... it can happen.
Well, sharks don't put their fin above the water, so the fin's above the water. If they swim at the surface, the fin sticks out of the water because the fin's on top.
Right.
It's the same way if you swim at top of the water, your head or back is out of the water because it's on top.
But, you know... A famous movie did it, and now every shark in a movie has the fin above the water. This movie does an interesting thing where the fin is above the water until the shark starts getting close to its victim, and then it goes down. It goes into stealth mode.
Or opposite. It's nowhere to be seen until it's close enough to a main character
rising
so
up.
That now we can have the chase scene.
So it's doing the fin above the water thing. It's doing the blood in the water trope.
Mm-hmm.
As soon as there's blood in the water, the shark's going to go over and grab it.
Which they don't do just a dozen times.
No, they do it really just that one time.
So like not as bad as a lot of other movies do it to where it's like every time we see something red hit the water, we know a shark's going
to
show up.
Yes. And you could, if you really wanted to give credit to the movie and be on the movie side, you could argue that the shark turns around because it wants to eat that lady.
Yes.
That, like, she is the reason that it's here. It seeks revenge.
Mm-hmm. And they do have it, like, pause and consider her a moment before eating the scientist.
Like, it's relishing the moment.
Yeah.
You killed my two friends, my family, presumably. They also do the shark coming up out of the water thing that movies love to do, which sharks can do.
Yes.
Some sharks do that.
There are definitely sharks that, and in fairness, Makos are famous for jumping and breaching out of the water. Not, I don't think typically for feeding purposes, but they are very athletic and as acrobatic as one can be for a shark.
So this movie absolutely hits a lot of the shark tropes. There is a logic in the movie as to why they are acting that way, but the end result is a movie that just does all the shark tropes.
Yes. So it's definitely better because it gave a reason, but it didn't do too much different with that reasoning.
Right.
Like they still, I've seen other shark movies where they act like these sharks for the most part, even without the suggestion that they have big brains.
Yes.
Like this is a pretty normal shark movie shark in many regards. You vocalized a reason, which at least gave an explanation.
Yes. And when we're talking about the way that science is portrayed or wildlife is portrayed in movies, this is always an important thing to remember, that the framing of the film, like what happens on screen, is always going to take precedent in the minds of the audience over the text, the dialogue, the thing. This is a movie where, yes, the movie does explicitly say repeatedly, these are not normal sharks. This is not how normal sharks behave. But the memorable parts of the movie are sharks being monstrous predators.
Yeah.
And that's what's going to stick in people's minds. So this movie is, even though it's giving explanations for it, it is absolutely doubling down on typical shark movie monster tropes.
It is a good example of that, like showing versus telling. Very often showing is going to win out in the long term of if you tell us a character is the smartest character in the world, but they never do anything smart in the movie, then I have no reason to believe. And I'm not going to remember that character as what you told me they were.
Right. Well, it's got the same thing that comes up when we talk about Jurassic Park.
Yes.
Where it's like there is logic in the movie for why these dinosaurs from different time periods are in the park together, interacting together. But that's not going to stop people from coming away from the movie lumping those dinosaurs together in their head.
Yes, exactly.
It's still perpetuating a misconception, even if the movie technically explains what it is.
Yes.
So when we see sharks in movies like this, yes, in the context of this movie, it is logically explained. But also it's using that as a vessel to then do all the shark movie monstery stuff.
Yes. One thing I did appreciate about the way they handled the monstery portrayal is that the concern for the people is their own survival. But then finally, when they have that moment of like, we have to kill this shark, Mm-hmm. It's because it's about to get out into the ocean.
Yes.
And it's like, we've created potentially one of the worst invasive species if this thing gets out and then propagates. You know, right. It's a female shark. If it has babies that share its genetic alterations, we could see a massive, you know, ecological problem of invasive sharks.
Yeah, you get the impression that because you reach a point in the movie where these characters have gotten away from the shark.
Yeah.
Like, they're basically safe, and then they say, oh, she's gonna escape and we have to stop them.
Yep. That now we need to do whatever we can to keep that shark from getting out into the open ocean. Yes.
Prior to that, so three sharks die in this movie. Mm-hmm. Well, four sharks die in this movie.
Yes.
One is fed to the other sharks, which I do think is also an interesting tropey thing, because they feed a tiger shark to these sharks.
Yeah.
Which is very much that, you know, power scaling thing.
Yes.
Where it's the DBZ thing, where we're going to bring in this new villain and show how strong he is by having him instantly defeat the last villain. So yeah, these sharks only eat sharks, and they're eating the famously dangerous tiger sharks.
And they never give a reason why they only eat sharks. It feels purely like it is that.
Mm-hmm.
They are so intimidating that they only eat intimidating things.
Yes.
And that's another one of those classic of like, what makes a predator scarier than the last predator? It eats the last predator.
It eats predators. Hunts other predators.
Yes.
The first two times that the monster sharks get killed, it's effectively in self-defense.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
One of it's kind of revenge, but it's mainly self-defense. He says, you killed my bird.
Yes.
And then he blows it up. But the last one is absolutely, we have to stop this invasive species.
Mm-hmm.
So in terms of shark portrayal in movies, not great.
No.
As just the trope. I might give it a 3 out of 10.
Yeah.
A little bit up from Meg 2.
Yeah, there are scenes I would give like a 4 or 5.
Yeah.
There are certain lines of dialogue and certain moments that I would give 4s or 5s to. But overall, it feels like a pretty standard shark movie.
And they are, to its credit, throughout, especially the first half of the movie, characters are continuously commenting on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Samuel L. Jackson's character a bunch of times is like, why can the sharks do this?
Yes.
Like, it shouldn't be able to do this.
Yes.
This isn't how sharks act. But then it is just using them to do those sharky tropes.
Yeah.
There is one other species besides humans in this movie. It is a parrot. So there is a dinosaur in the movie.
True.
I don't have very much to say about the parrot.
Nope.
It's LL Cool J's friend, although he's not very nice to it.
Yeah.
He's not mean. He says mean things to the parrot.
Yes.
Which, in his defense, the parrot can't understand what he's saying.
Well, they also do the parrot thing that so many things will do with parrots. And, like, parrots can mimic human speech. They have the vocal capabilities to mimic what we say. But they do the thing that lots of it does, where it's the suggestion that they know what they're saying.
Yeah.
Kind of like, they're actively being cheeky, and they're actively being uphill.
Yep. Well, and this parrot says exclusively rude and profane sentences.
Yep. Which I always find funny, because it's like, it's not that that's not possible, but the way you're playing it like a character that's being a sideline commenter, which is a bit overdramatic for the bird.
The bird's comic relief for the movie.
It doesn't make it.
The bird doesn't make it. I'm so sorry. The bird does not make it through. Almost no one makes it in this movie.
Oh, yeah. No. This is a very high death toll.
That's another thing, actually, that I meant to mention about on the sharks being monsters. One of the sharks takes down a helicopter.
Yeah.
But the implication, again, this super strength of the sharks, is that it pulls a helicopter through the air from the cable that's hanging from the helicopter.
Yeah, yeah.
So they're absolutely doing the monster-y animal things.
Oh yeah, no, these sharks are locomotives in the water, just powering through whatever's in front of them.
Beyond the creatures of the film, there's also a bunch of science that happens in this movie.
Yeah,
this is a very science heavy film in terms of there are scientist characters. It takes place on a research vessel, and the characters are the premise here is that there is science happening.
Yeah, we're doing a very particular form of research, and that's why all of this is set up.
Yes. And in the science and the scientists, as they are shown in this movie, are also very tropey.
Yep.
In a bunch of very interesting ways. Not in they're not just the like exhaustive science-y tropes. there's interesting science-y tropes here.
Yes.
Our main character, Susie, I forget what the rest of her name is. It's her research that it seems like she's leading, or she's at least one of the people leading it.
Yeah, she's the one that gets called in to the president of the company. Yes. So she's at least one of the lead people that is responsible for it.
Her and Dr. Selvig seem to be the big two people in charge.
Yep.
And like you said, they're using shark brain tissue to come up with a cure for Alzheimer's. And they avoid a lot of the typical scientist tropes. They don't feel like very tropey scientist characters, but they are built on a couple of tropes. Most prominently, she is the scientist with a personal stake and who is willing to bend the rules and circumvent the regulations to get the results that she needs.
Yes, it's the classic trope of a scientist either without or at least with questionable morals that gives the excuse that progress is worth the sacrifice.
Right. We're going to save so many lives.
Yes.
With it. Who cares that I cut a few corners?
But is also revealed to be actually driven by personal connection and vendettas on the issue that her father suffered from Alzheimer's, and that's why she's so driven. Mm-hmm. So the altruistic reasons she keeps giving are actually the rationalized reasoning.
Yes. And this is something we see in movie scientists a lot.
This is probably up there with one of the most classic movie scientist cliches of, I'm willing to forego ethics because of the greater good, but really I just want to do it for my own reasoning.
Yes.
That's probably one of the most common sci-fi scientist things.
Yep. And it falls into this broader category of the corrupt scientist.
Yep.
Scientists, your scientists were so preoccupied with whether or not they could, they didn't stop to think if they should.
Yes.
It's that idea of science, which itself is part of the broader genre of people in authority or people in charge being corrupt and doing unethical things. This happens a lot with movie scientists because it's a very powerful narrative tool.
Yes.
Here's a person with knowledge and power and influence who has been corrupted by personal drive, personal experiences that are leading them to act unethically, and that's dangerous.
Well, and they also have the trope that goes along in line with a lot of that stuff of, and you're doing all of this in isolation or relative secrecy.
Yes.
That it's playing into that old fear and villainization of scientists. Who knows what they're doing behind their closed doors,
right,
in their secret labs. And
this is literally almost a secret lab.
Yes. Like, even though it's backed by a company and a board of trustees that are supporting this research, when Samuel L. Jackson gets there, it's clear he has no clue.
No, and what's he's also going not on. Welcome.
Yeah, like, no.
No one's happy that he's there.
It's very clear that no one has actually been keeping tabs on what this lab has been doing until a shark got out.
Yeah, and she talks about how she hired at least one of the people there intentionally because he was a person she could trust to keep quiet about stuff.
And that's why so many of these movies start with a, hey, you finally caught enough attention that people are going to come check on you, and we're going to go, oh my gosh, what have you all been up to this whole time?
Again, that's the DNA of Jurassic Park.
Yep.
A disaster happened, and now you're garnering attention, and people are going to start noticing it.
Which is connected to that whole perception of science not being accessible to the public and not being easily transparent to the general public, and feeling like it is secret behind closed doors, and you just tell us what you're willing to tell us because that's the only, we only hear about it every now and then in the news,
right?
But who knows what you're actually doing because it feels inaccessible and it feels secret because it's not widely open to a lot of people.
And it's a very satisfying narrative for us as, you know, receivers of stories. The idea of a person in power being corrupted and then doing bad stuff, doing unethical stuff behind closed doors, that's a very compelling story.
Yeah, power corrupts.
And it comes up a lot in cases like this with scientists, which unfortunately, the same way that the way the sharks are portrayed contributes to popular misconception and negative feelings toward sharks, this portrayal of scientists contributes to popular misunderstandings and distrust towards science.
That's the reason that even though it's a joke, every time anything gets brought up about ancient DNA, there's comments in the articles of, didn't we have movies that told us this is a bad idea?
Yeah, you shouldn't be doing that. I've seen what happens when you do it. Well, we in our society, there is lots of general distrust and misunderstanding of science and scientific processes, and it's no wonder we grew up watching movie after movie where we see that almost every time there's a lab of scientists doing something important, they're corrupt and unethical, and then it goes horribly wrong and everyone gets eaten by sharks or dinosaurs.
Yeah. Well, it's like when you break this movie down to its bare minimum parts, it's an anti-GMO movie.
Yes.
You genetically modified something and a bunch of people died. Look what you did.
Well, and that actually is the other part of the science here that I think is a really interesting trope, is that it's supposed to be that they're doing some sort of hormone treatment with the sharks. And Samuel L. Jackson comes in and he's like, you're doing hormones or whatever they're doing with the sharks. The reveal is we also genetically altered the sharks. And when that comes up, Samuel L. Jackson's like, what? How dare you genetically alter the
and they mention that there's laws, that this is blatantly illegal. There are laws for this specifically.
And the implication is genetically tampering with the animals was the line you crossed.
Yes.
That's why everything goes haywire, and that's why you're the evil scientist of the movie, which also very much very Jurassic Parkian. In you did new far-reaching stuff with genetic engineering and disaster has ensued.
It's also got the Jurassic Park thing of that's not actually why everything goes wrong.
Yes.
There are people saying these sharks are becoming more dangerous. We should do something about it. And she's actively ignoring that because she wants to further her research.
Right. She wants the results.
Yeah. And then you decided to do a major procedure on the weekend with a skeleton crew. Like,
yes, when there's a storm happening outside.
Very much like Jurassic Park. The reason things actually went wrong is because you didn't handle the situation well, even if the thing you did is immoral, which is up for philosophical debate.
Mm.
But even if that is wrong, that's not why everything went wrong.
The movie is leaning into the genetic tampering bad trope, which is another a real world angle that gets misconstrued and spread around.
You should not mess with nature in that way.
Right. You shouldn't be messing with genes. You shouldn't be tampering with stuff. Even though in the real world, we do all sorts of experiments where we mess with genes and research on genes.
Like that's what domesticated animals is, us messing with genes just through the slow process of selective breeding.
And even tons of medical research is effectively tampering with genetics, but in a way that is perfectly regulated and safe, and it's no big deal.
Yeah, we are surrounded by genetic manipulation in the modern age because it's just a part of a ton of different research and industries.
Yes. This movie, much like Jurassic Park before it, and a lot of 90s sci-fi movies, is leaning into that fear of genetics as a ostensibly dangerous realm of scientific investigation.
Well, and it also feels like it's leaning into the concept of, because they almost always at some point say some version of like, you've messed with the natural order or the way things should be. And it kind of has.
There is a line in this where he says, you've put us at the bottom of the food chain.
Yes, exactly. A lot of these movie plots feel like they are playing off the fear of, if you tamper enough, eventually you will open a Pandora's box.
Yep.
That just statistically, surely, you will bring about our doom just because you are you're changing things and you're taking the system we know and are relatively comfortable with and altering it. And just that means most likely, eventually, it's going to come back and bite us all in the butt.
Yes.
Which is a very interesting kind of doomsayer, ominous type of of fear.
It's very much building on that concept of playing God or messing with powers we shouldn't be messing with.
Which there's definitely a lot of undertones and themes in this movie.
Yes.
That emphasizes that.
Absolutely. There is a character who's a preacher.
Who's named Preach.
Yeah, they call him Preach.
That's what everyone calls this character.
That's his nickname. They say, you're Preach, the preacher.
Yep. And he is constantly, he's the chef. He is constantly referencing scripture and referencing God's will in this event.
Same thing with Jurassic Park. Has a bunch of God, right? The idea of we are taking the reins of power we're not supposed to be dealing with.
Yes.
That is an extremely popular science trope. If you want something sci-fi to go wrong, you have a scientist who's playing God, who's skirting regulations for their own personal needs, and that's the premise, that's the inciting incident for why everything goes wrong.
Well, and it is playing off, as we were saying earlier, but in this context, the idea that it's karmic, that the reason this went wrong is because you stepped into a realm you were never meant to.
Mm-hmm.
Your reach extended past your grasp, and you now are being punished for what you did. And this one definitely has a lot of that feeling in not only the overall plot, but specific events even.
Yes.
Of like what happens to different characters. It's like, yeah, no, because you deserved it, this is happening.
Well, and the main scientist lady, she even has a scene where she puts herself in extra danger to get the this was in the 90s where you could just, all of my research is on these tapes.
Yes.
And so I need to preserve these tapes. They're not backed up to the cloud. So she has to go. And the other character, indeed, the preacher, is like, why would you do that? Yes. What are you doing?
Like, give up on that stuff. Haven't you seen that that's not worth it?
The implication that why are you putting your personal drive in front of the safety of everybody here? Even though the personal drive in this case is legitimately medical research that's supposed to help with Alzheimer's patients. So it's a little bit of a muddled, the scenario is a little bit messy.
That's a lot of times the metaphors in these kinds of stories gets a little messy of like, is there a suggestion that you shouldn't have been trying to cure this the way you were?
If you could.
Because it was shown that you were being successful. We see that they do cure unfiring synapses.
Yes. Incidentally, and now there's a whole lot of like biomedical stuff to be talked about in this movie, and I am not a biomedicalist. There is the scene where they get the cells out of the shark's brain and then they bring it and they treat the Alzheimer's cells and they bring it up on the scene and everything starts glowing and zapping and stuff. And that's absolutely not how medical research works.
Nope.
But it is very much the movie trope of we took the cells directly out of the shark and put them in a petri dish.
Yep.
And then things start happening in the dish and that tells us that we have been successful.
Yep.
Which is not, that's one of those movie shorthand things that I get why you do that in a movie, because the real process of, yes, we took cells and then we ran them through the centrifuge and we did 74 trials on all of them and they came back and here's our data sheet and they were 69% successful and that's great. That's great news. That's not quite as exciting for your visual medium.
And it's not as bad as some other versions of that I've seen. This one's a little more, you're skipping steps instead of just completely misrepresenting.
Yes.
It's like, you're getting the main idea. That's not actually what it would look like or how we would do it. But it's okay.
It's fine. It's kind of there.
It's fitting what you're saying you're trying to do. You know, there's other ones I've seen where it's like, that's not even what you said you were trying to do.
Yes.
This one's not as bad, but yes.
So yeah, in addition to hitting a lot of shark movie tropes, this movie is also built on a lot of scientist tropes, unethical science tropes, animal research tropes, genetic manipulation tropes. A lot of that is sort of baked into it in a similar way to other similar sci-fi movies.
Yes.
Now, that's some of the broad big picture things of this. It's a really interesting film in terms of where it fits into the realms of scientific portrayal in movie. It's a pretty classic example.
Yeah, it really is.
Of science in movies.
It really is. Well, and it also does some of them in interesting ways where a lot of times the movie will have a person just say what the moral of the story is.
Mm-hmm.
And this one doesn't not do that, but it doesn't do it, at least to me, it feels like as much as some other, like Jurassic Park did it more blatantly.
Yeah, Ian Malcolm looks into the camera several times and explains what you're supposed to be taking from
exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And this is why that was a bad idea. This one's much more like just trusting that you get of like, yeah, no, we all can see why she's bad for this.
Right.
Moving on. We're not going to like ignore that she's bad, but we're not going to just state out the morals step by step. As heavy-handedly it felt.
Yeah, this conversation has been interesting because I don't think of this movie as being as entrenched in tropes as it is.
Yes.
Very clearly through this conversation. But I think it's doing it in ways that are less obvious and egregious as some other films.
Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't feel like a tropey movie in my mind, even though it is absolutely very tropey through and through.
Yes.
Now, as we always say on Silver Screen Science, the goal here is not just to nitpick specific things and rant about the science portrayal in the movie, what they got wrong. And that's because we think it's interesting to look at the broader picture of how science is portrayed. And also, lots of people do nitpicking the specific things that are right and wrong in movies.
Yes.
There's tons of that content out there. However, ranting about specific science that is bad is also fun. So, at the end of every Silver Screen Science discussion, we like to give ourselves the opportunity for mini rants, where we get a few minutes to just go off about something sciencey that bugs us in the movie. Will, what's your mini rant for Deep Blue Sea?
I have always had confusion and issue with the way the base sinks in the movie.
Mm.
And the reasoning given for how the base is sinking, because in the film, the sharks are breaking into the sea lab and causing it to flood. And the humans at times are causing it to flood as they have to open certain doors to get into new areas and breaking the airlocks,
mm-hmm.
seals that were keeping areas flood free. And it's said that the sharks are doing this purposefully to cause the base to sink, which will bring the fencing that was around their enclosures down low enough that they can chew through the chain link fence at the top instead of having to try to get through the titanium fencing that's below the water. But the explanation that's given is that the flooding of the base is overwhelming the weight limit, the structural weight limit of the base.
Right, and the struts in the walls are going to start to collapse and crumble.
The struts, as he put it, will snap like toothpicks,
mm-hmm.
and it will collapse into the water, causing everything to lower into the water. But that's suggesting that it's a floating base and that it is literally sinking. Because if it's a base that's standing up in the water, putting water in it shouldn't make it heavier than the water it's already in.
Right.
That should just equalize it. It should now just be flooded. So it's suggesting that it's floating, but it's a concrete sea base with support pillars. So it shouldn't be floating.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the main plot points of basically almost every action sequence is explained in a way that doesn't actually make sense.
Yeah.
Now, maybe it is supposed to be a floating base, but it just, the base you show us, I do not believe could be a floating base. And maybe I'm wrong. If someone out there knows of like, actually, there's a whole bunch of floating bunkers that we have.
Hmm.
That's actually a technology it exists.
Right.
I may be unaware of those.
Yeah. Or if there's a different explanation that either we've misunderstood or that the movie hasn't presented.
Yes, they may have used the wrong term or something. They mm-hmm. may have said weight when they meant pressure. And it's like, actually, yeah, no, a flooding base can cause the depressurization of the chambers causes damage or something. But the words they use to me reads as this is a floating base.
Yeah.
Which it doesn't seem like it can be. So it's always stood out to me of the main subplot of the whole movie. Doesn't actually make sense.
My mini rant for this movie, this might be the most specific, like uber specific moment in the movie. I've never noticed it, I don't think, before this rewatch that we did before recording this. There is a scene in the movie, the most famous scene in the movie, I think, where we gave you a spoiler warning. Samuel L. Jackson gets eaten by a shark and he gets interrupted in the middle of this big speech. And his character has a backstory that's alluded to throughout the movie, that he was trapped in an avalanche a long time ago, and it was a whole big story and everything, blah, blah, blah. And he starts giving this speech when they're talking about the place is going to get flooded. And he says, "You think water's fast, you should see ice. It moves like it's got a mind of its own, like it knows it killed the world once and got a taste for murder." And he said that, and I said, "What?
Yep.
Did the ice, is that supposed to be a reference to ice ages?
Yep.
Is that what that is?
Yep.
Because ice ages didn't kill the world.
Mm-mm.
I never could. The ice age was just a thing. Some stuff wasn't happy during ice ages. But that's not. It didn't kill. Even Snowball Earth didn't kill the world.
Yeah, I was like, at best, that's what you're referencing. And no way.
I highly doubt that that's what you're referencing.
No way.
So what is that supposed to? Is this a? Because ice ages are often portrayed as like an apocalypse scenario.
Because it sounds like it would be.
Right. But it's just a colder. It's just a colder world.
Just cold.
That's all it is. So that line stood out to me, and I was like, "That's not that. You just snuck that in there, and you thought I wouldn't notice that you said that ice killed the world."
He had just watched Batman and Robin. What killed the dinosaurs?
the ice age. And he was going off of that. He did. Yeah, actually, that movie. This was like during the filming of this movie. That movie had just come out, so that's true. That was 97. So yeah, I don't know if that's like a myth a lot. Like if it's a every now and then I have that moment where someone will say something like that in the movies, and I have to go, I have to turn to one of my friends and go, is this in the Bible? Is this a Bible thing?
Yep.
Because that'll happen sometimes where I'll be watching a movie and I'm like, oh, that was an interesting concept. And then someone like Will, who was raised more religious than I was, will be like, yeah, that's this story from the Bible. And I'm like, oh, right, the Bible.
Yep.
That does get referenced a lot.
Yep. Absolutely.
But I don't think this is like a biblical reference or anything.
Yeah.
I assume that it's like an Ice Age nod or something.
That would
like
be
that.
My assumption. And again, it's a cool line.
Yeah.
It's a cool line.
It's a cool line. Doesn't make any sense.
No, that's not true. This is why you were dumb enough to stand so close to the water.
Right on the wall. He even gets warned.
Yeah, he tells you not to.
Carter tells him to, and that guy's going to make it.
The shark expert says, I wouldn't stand that close if I were you. Just
don't
saying.
Stand next to the water.
And then you just proceed to monologue around the
right
pool.
Right around the pool. Not even the first person in the movie to get chomped on by standing too close to the water.
Yep.
This is not, you should have seen this coming.
Yep. He's too busy thinking about the Ice Age.
He was doing, it was a cool monologue. He was in the middle of it, there were cool lines.
It's a fun scene.
Hey, thanks everybody for listening to us chat about Deep Blue Sea. Like I said, this is part of a short series of Silver Screen Science movies we're doing in April 2024. We talked about Meg 2, The Trench, last episode. We've got one more to do, the next episode of Silver Screen Science. One more shark-related movie to discuss.
If we can find one.
If we can, yeah, we'll see what we can think of. See if there's anything, out there. And then in May, on May 5th, we will be doing a Silver Screen Science live stream for everybody to join.
Then we can all talk about shark movies.
You can suggest all the shark movies that we didn't talk about in this. We only chose the good ones and Meg 2.
Yes.
So we're doing two more, and they are on the two good shark movies.
Yes.
And also, if you are a patron, we will be putting out More Thoughts episodes for all of these Silver Screen Science movie discussions. More Thoughts is where we just set aside all the science talk and just talk about our personal thoughts on the movie. It's a lot of fun. If you're not a patron, that's one of the goodies you can get if you become a patron on the Patreon.
Yeah, I always look forward to More Thoughts.
It's a lot of fun. So check out those other Silver Screen episodes. Come join us for the Silver Screen live stream in May. Also, more main episodes are coming out. Also, we're releasing Spotlight 2024, where we're interviewing other SciComers and podcasters. We got a lot of stuff going on, so check all that out. And join us at the end of April for our final Silver Screen Science shark discussion about a movie.
Yeah, do that.
And that's all. I don't have a good Deep Blue Sea thing to say here. Something that LL Cool J says. They gave him all the good lines.
They gave him a lot. Yeah.
If I was going to do another mini rant, I would be about LL Cool J's explanation of general relativity.
Yeah.
Which I have always found very funny.
Yes.
It is an extremely funny little line, and I like it enough to not make it my mini rant.
Yes. Yep.
Well, listeners, go watch Deep Blue Sea. Go hug a shark. be nice to sharks. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to the Common Descent Podcast. You can follow us on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, and check our WordPress blog for pictures and links after each episode. Huge thanks to our patrons whose support helps keep this podcast running and who get access to bonus goodies on Patreon. The song you're hearing is called On the Origin of Species by Protodome, which we found at ocremix.org. Thanks again for listening. We hope you'll join us next time.